Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to start.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
It helps if we turn on the mic. Yell, baby, yeah. It is time for the number one internet sports talk show in the nation on a Saturday morning, 9 o'clock Eastern, all over the United States. And also in this great land of 2012, we've got phone applications, we've got affiliate radio stations, we're everywhere. Not to mention right there on your PC as well, right here through Blog Talk Radio. Well, of course, you know who I am. I am El Presidente, your leader for the Minion followers for the rest of the next 2 hours. And I tell you what, we have got a great show for you today, of course. Oh, yeah, every freaking Saturday morning we have a great show for you. So this one's no better. Actually, this was much better because it's a different week. But anyway, I'm so glad that you guys could take time out of your Saturday morning to join us. We're going to talk a lot. We got some racing coming up with Kenny Barr from Speed Talk. Going to be talking with us about the new Speed Talk and what's going on with them. And, you know, we're going to be talking about some of the IndyCar Championship. We're going to be talking about some NASCAR. And, of course, I'm sure we'll have some other great racing topics to talk about in the meantime there. As well, guys, we've got college football coming up here at the bottom of the hour at 9:30 with Evan Williams and Jimmy the Intern Kavanaugh. We're going to break down all your college action this week. Plus, coming up at 10:15, the fantasy football huddle, and we're going to talk a little bit of Colts. We're going to talk about a little bit of NFL, and we're going to make sure that your fantasy football team is ready to go for week number 3 of the NFL. Can you believe that we are already here at week number 3? Well, it's going to be an exciting show, guys. Certainly, you're more than welcome to chime in anytime. 917-889-8516 is my digits. Just give me a call, and we'll get you on the air with any of our panel of experts that we have throughout the day. But I'll tell you what, and not to mention also, guys, coming up here, we've got Elizabeth the Greek giving her picks. And I tell you what, that is a segment that we started running a couple weeks ago. Make sure you check her out on Facebook, Elizabeth the Greek, and give her a listen here on The Balance a little bit later today. It's going to be a great time, guys. Well, I'm going to tell you what, when we get back, we're going to be talking some racing with Kenny Barr from Speed Talk right here on the Balance Radio Network, guys. So I'm going to tell you, this is a show that you guys don't want to miss. We'll be right back.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
This week on the new and revamped Speed Talk, some of the new players are introduced. That's right, I, Kenny Barr, come back as the new co-host alongside Cliff Tanner, and we get right into it and talk about the chase and who we think will win. We also discuss the IRL Championship and the Geico 400 in Chicago. To top it off, we introduce our new segment, Do You Know? Speed Talk, where most shows don't dare to tread.
Give me
I have had the biggest problem with the mic, guys. We're back. Yes, yes, we are. Absolutely. I was there talking to myself, and I have the biggest problem with my microphone. I turn it off during the breaks, you know, so that I can drink my coffee or I can talk, and then I just continue to talk with the mic off. So we're going to be joining us now is Mr. Kenny Barr, who raises the bar every Saturday morning right here on Speed Talk when he's available to join us. Kenny, how are you doing, sir, now that you can hear me?
Oh, I'm doing great, and my microphone's working just fine.
It's amazing how those telephone microphones work no matter what. So what's going on in the world of speed? Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're fine. That's just as long as you remember to call in at the right time, then you're in great shape.
There you go. That's all you got to do. You got to just remember to call in at the right time. Well, Kenny, I know that there's been some changes going on over there at Speed Talk. Talk to us a little bit about what's going on there. Obviously, we heard the last episode with Pete LaFuchsia right here on the Balance Radio Network last Sunday. So this week starts a new chapter for Speed Talk. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, Cliff and I, I'm going to co-host with Cliff, and Pete has moved on to other, whatever you want to call it. He's decided to chase things around other than racing, which is probably a good idea. Cliff and I sit around this week and just shoot the breeze, like a couple of guys sitting at a restaurant having breakfast, and we talk about the chase and who we think are going to win the chase, and I'm sure we disagree about that. We reviewed the Chicago race. Talk a little bit about IRL and how all it takes is a little twitch of the steering wheel to lose a championship, i.e. willpower. And we introduce a new segment called Do You Know, which we're going to come along with interesting little facts about racing and things that you may or may not have even thought about, so to help inform and educate our fans during the course of the show.
Well, I tell you what, I'm excited to hear the new episode. We're going to be airing it here tomorrow afternoon. Always right after the Colts game, guys, so all you got to do is watch the Colts game, be done with the Colts game, and there we go, right into Speed Talk. So it's real easy to remember. When the Colts game goes off, we're running Speed Talk right here on the Balance Radio Network. So it's just that easy. Well, Kenny, you mentioned it. Man, I tell you what, here we go. Last Friday, and obviously we talk a lot of racing on here. We talk a lot of IndyCar and so forth. But, you know, it came down to the nitty-gritty. Came down to 3 points. Can you believe this? This is one of the things that I think is extremely exciting. Of course, you know, I'm one of those redneck, red-blooded Americans. But I think it was great to see an American accept the ASTAR Cup. You know, so talk to me a little bit about that. I tell you what, it came down to the actual wire. Willpower, as you know, and we joked about it a little bit about willpower just can't seem to get it together. And, you know, where there is will, there must not be no power. And, you know, all the jokes that have been going around. And willpower said it himself in a post-race interview. I must be jinxed. So I don't know if you agree with me or not, but it was certainly played to the benefit of Ryan Hunter Ray. So talk with us a little bit about the championship race and how it came to be.
Well, I was a little bit stunned. I bet you I watched that replay, 40 times, 50 times, trying to decide whether that car actually broke or he just lost it and it snaked out from underneath him. And I didn't see a half-shaft chunk come off that car. I didn't see a tire go flat. I think it just scooted out from underneath him and found the concrete wall. He's got to be – he's snake-bitten. There's no doubt about it because he's just so tough all year long. He gets himself in a position to win, which many, many, many people would absolutely give their right arm and part of their left leg for. And he just – hasn't been able to finish the deal, and I don't think it's any reflection on the team, or they wouldn't be in that position to begin with, and it's not much of a reflection on willpower. It's just race and luck. I mean, a lot of it comes down to luck. Winning every race, you got to be a little lucky anyway, and winning a championship, you got to have that just laced throughout the season all year long, and he just hadn't had it. And then the way that thing finished, I am a little bit disappointed in the IRL. Red flagging it instead of letting the last three laps run, or not having the green-white checkered rule like NASCAR does, because just as quick as Will Power shook a little bit and spun out, why didn't, you know, that could have happened to Ryan Hunter Ray, or somebody could have touched him, or he could have had a flat, or it could have been some other weird thing, and the championship go back to Will Power. So as much as it was on the line that day, the IRL should have run finished the race under green, and just let everything shake out like it should have shook out. And it may have not changed a bit, but you got to let them race.
You got to let them race. You know, Michael Andretti, I think, actually summed it up right there during the when all this was going on, and after Barfield threw the red flag. Timing was just a terrible, terrible thing for that, especially for Michael Andretti. And you know, he said it himself during the race there, they're just changing the rules as they go. Who gives them the authority, Kenny, to do that? I know that upset a lot of fans when that happened. What was the point of stopping the race just so that they could make sure that they didn't finish underneath caution?
That's a great question. You have to ask the powers to be at the top of the IRL chain of command. Although, actually, they probably didn't, you know, the very top of the people didn't make that decision. Race command will make that decision. That is done in the booth by the same people that decide, hey, you're driving dirty, or hey, you broke a rule, or hey, you need to take a pit penalty for what have you. The same people make those same decisions. So why they made that decision, I don't know. You know, maybe they wanted an American to win the thing for the first time since 2006, which it doesn't bother me any. I'm kind of glad about that. But it wasn't the right decision. I don't know why they made it for sure. There could have been all sorts of circumstances that we don't know about and probably we'll never find out about. But that's made on the fly. And sometimes those are tough decisions to make on the fly. I've been in broadcast booths, and I've been in race control booths where there's three different guys making the decision, and all three of them have a different opinion. You know, so whoever's in charge has got to finally just decide. And just like old Abe Lincoln said, the only way you can make you can never make anybody or everybody happy, but I know a way to make everybody mad. Try to make everybody happy. So, especially in the racing game, there's somebody who's always going to be upset about something, and it is what it is, and a week or two later you're going to end up, unless you're going to run through the appellate process, and I don't know how you could appeal that and have everybody come back and finish three laps, you're pretty much done.
Well, let's talk a little bit real quickly here about Will Power. I'm watching this race, and I mean, he's not around anyone. I'm really am confused as to what happened. He got loose, he spun, he hits the wall. From your technical mind that you have, if you're watching this race, and obviously you have a little bit more technical understanding of these race cars than the average guy watching the race, but you're watching that race, what did you see happen with Will Power's car?
Nothing, and that's why I was telling you that I watched that replay as often as I could watch it on Speed and ESPN and every place else that showed it. And I got this great big 55-inch high-def TV, and I stood there with my nose right to the screen trying to figure out if you saw a piece of debris pop from underneath the car or a tire that just came loose. I mean, I looked as much as a guy can look on television for a mechanical piece broken, come apart, or an explanation for it, and I never found one, and I haven't read one. I think he just flat lost it. I don't know if he blipped the throttle a little bit too early, wiggled the steering wheel, just to try to correct a little something that he felt that the car started to get loose, and he overcorrected. And all it takes is just a little snap of that wheel. If you can see those wheel adjustments or steering adjustments, if you got one of those cameras that are mounted like over the right shoulder of the driver, and you can see the right knuckle every once in a while, you'll see a guy, you know, just correct it a little bit, just like you do going down the highway when the road isn't just perfect. I don't know if that's what he did, and it overdid it, and the tires didn't bite, and the way he went, but that girl just got out from underneath him, and there was no saving it. He was going too fast, and he was along for the ride at that point.
Well, absolutely, and you know, it was just in a way, you know, we make jokes about willpower just not being able to get it done, kind of like Tony Romo not being able to win a Super Bowl. You know, it's just we make jokes about it, but at the same time about it, it's got to be extremely frustrating to a guy like willpower who really, and we talked about it right here on the show, Kenny. It was his race to lose, and that's exactly what he did. And by the way, I do want to take my own props. I did pick Ryan Hunter-Reay to win the championships right here last Saturday, so I'm going to toot my own horn because nobody else does it for me. But, you know, but it was his race to lose. And so it's got to be very, very frustrating for a team like Will Power's team to yet again to be within the grasp of a championship only to see it slip away at the last minute.
Yeah, and that's got to be just completely disheartening. Now we're going to see what Will Power's made out of, the same thing we said last year. Is this going to give him a little bit more additional fire to just go out and have such a big lead at the end of the season that wherever he finishes in the last race don't matter? Is he going to fold? Is he going to lose his confidence when it comes down to crunch time that he can't close? He'd be an interesting story all year long to watch him and Team Penske and how they react to another near victory on the championship.
Well, I tell you also, and it just brings me to another topic here about IndyCar. IndyCar is considering, and at least to my knowledge yet, they have not made the ruling yet, but they've at least considered that they're going to be extending their race season. So obviously, we're not going to have the grand finale there at Fontana next year. One would think, you know, perhaps maybe they'll have the scuttlebutt race in Houston or something in late October. I'm not sure. But first of all, if they extend the race series, where do they go? And second of all, how does that affect the Ultimate Championship?
Well, it depends on where they go, really. If it's going to be an oval track or a road course they canceled one in China this year because of political unrest over there. That's an interesting question, and it's going to end up with a very open-ended answer because it depends on how many races they expand, how late in the season they do it, where the venues are that they're going to do it at. Because, I mean, you got the Mike Conways of the world who just don't want to run ovals anymore, which really kind of threw A.J. Foyt Racing into a tizzy. They had to get Cunningham in there in a great big hurry. So how would it affect the championship and the whole racing thing? Plus, you got to think about the TV contract. The TV ratings for IndyCar were up significantly this year over several past years. So the guy that they hired from the rodeo circuit that actually started promoting them and setting deals with IZOD and NBC Sports is doing a great job as far as bringing the popularity of that back, especially after they lost their marketing giant in Miss Patrick. So it would be interesting, but I think it's not going to be just one or two. I think it's going to be big changes.
Well, let me ask you this. Does the date really come into play? I mean, do they really have to tinker with the date? I mean, it's 105 degrees on September 15th. You know, you aren't up against the Fall Cup date on the same track. when should they really look at the date as far as the championship goes? If you were in charge of on that committee or that panel that says our championship needs to be on this date, we need to have our races done between these dates, what would be your thought?
Not to cross the NFL as much as possible, but the IRL is its own separate entity, and it's got a serious base of fans. I would look at TV schedules. I'd look at things that are coming along. I wouldn't do it necessarily like Labor Day weekend. I don't know if I'd extend it into October. I know what I'd do. Forget all that. I'd make sure the TV people were comfortable with whatever we did, you know, because that's where the big money comes from as far as production and stuff. Unfortunately, money don't talk, it screams, and you got to follow the money trail in almost every situation. So I'd sit down with NBC Sports, see what they wanted to do. If they wanted the thing extended by two or three races, then I'd get going and work on it and see if I couldn't book a race in Michigan, because I think they'd be
terrifically fast up there, maybe too fast at this point. Late in the season, I think I'd go, you know, anywhere south of the Mason-Dixon line that would take me, that had a big enough venue where we could sell some tickets and do some good promotion and stuff. But talk to the TV people first. I'd stick a race in the middle of the year somewhere in the country, not China, not someplace that you can't depend on being able to go race at the time, and then just work from there.
Absolutely. Well, we want to wrap this up. Real quickly, though, I noticed that you probably got the same text that I got here during this conversation from your partner in crime and the leader of our gang, Cliff. He said, just face it, Will Power's just a choke artist.
Oh, see, Cliff, I like Cliff, and his opinions are his opinions, you know, and that's what's going to make our show good enough, because we're both mature adult men, and we can argue like heck and disagree and still like each other by the time the argument's over with. So, yeah, the phone's ringing in my ear, but I haven't bothered looking at the text yet.
Absolutely. Well, and one other thing, I do want to get your final grade for the season. You know, you look back at it, the way I look at it anyway, you know, what we saw in 2012, we saw the introduction of the brand-new design chassis as well. And, of course, you know, you look at the new DW12, and you look at – and also, they had a little bit of a, I think anyway, a true 50-50 split between ovals and the twisties. Which I thought were good, which were a good ideal and a good mix. So I think, well, overall, I say I give them a B+. Certainly better than what they've been in the past, have a lot of room to go, but certainly a very much of a passing grade this year for me. And what are your thoughts on that, Kenny?
Well, pretty similar. B- maybe a B for a little bit of excitement, doing some good stuff on TV and stuff. I think that the engineers, the guys behind the scenes, did a terrific job, because when they first tested these new cars and chassis, if you remember way back in March, they were a great big mitigated disaster. They wouldn't stick to the ground, they wouldn't turn, they wouldn't do nothing, and everybody's going, oh boy, did we make a mistake. But those guys really got after it, and by the time racing came around, they had a fairly decent handle on the cars. So I was impressed with all the guys who are smarter than most people and get those things going well. From that point forward, I think they did good. The engine changes over the course of the years made it interesting for a guy like me, because I'm always wanting to know why they made these engine changes. I mean, there was a whole bunch of them that last race. I think it was, what, 10 or 12 guys that took those grid penalties for various infractions, and a lot of them were changing the motor out for whatever reason. So, interesting. It's renewed my interest in that type of open wheel racing, because I've gotten to the point where I just, could take it or leave it. And I keep a much closer eye on it now because I can, first of all, with the TV and stuff. And second of all, it just has caught my interest again.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, and congratulations, and we got into all the conversation about Ryan Hunter-Reay and Will Power. Congratulations to Ed Carpenter, a great class act driver. Really, I think that, you know, he's accomplished a lot in his own right. I wish we really had a lot of time to get into the conversations about Ed Carpenter, but he's a class act, good role model, good family man. I've met him, talked with him many times, obviously went out on his own from Sarah Fisher Racing, started his own car team. So he's an owner driver, which in itself is a monumental task. And to come back and win a great race like that race was, hats off to Ed Carpenter as well.
Well, I agree. That was neat.
Go. And I also wanted to just also make sure, and I don't know if you've had an opportunity to meet him. I've met him several times. Obviously, he lives here in Indianapolis, and I've just been around the racing scene here in Indianapolis for so many years. Obviously, it's hard to not run into him at media centers from place to place. But Bob Jenkins, class act, calling it quits. Any thoughts on Bob Jenkins real quick there, Kenny?
No gobs of him. We touch on that on Speed Talk this week, too. Been at it for 30-plus years. It's called races from every place and every venue, from television to radio. Our thoughts and prayers are with him and his wife, who's battling brain cancer. I thought I was actually going to interview him a couple 3 weeks ago over at Winchester, and he regrettably had to cancel for that. And we certainly respect that to the nth degree. He lives in Carmel, so he's not too far away from you or us, as far as that goes. And when things settle down in life, we're going to try and have him on the show. We're going to see if we can't get a hold of him and stuff. But Bob Jenkins, just a coincidence. Professional. Love listening to him.
I tell you what, now that I'm part of the gang, I can probably help you out with that. But all right, guys,
Cliff put you through the initiation yet?
Not yet. I'm afraid of what the initiation might be. It had something to do with the ballerina outfit and Starbucks. I'm not really sure, but I.
so you're getting the full treatment. Okay.
Well, let's talk a little bit. I tell you what, I think the initiation is that I've got to arrange an interview with one Danica Patrick. I've never been able to do that. I've tried to talk with her, and she is Danica, and Danica's a spoiled little brat. We all know that, but we also love her. We love to hate her, and she's great eye candy. Obviously, everybody knows that. She's a great marketing tool. But also, as a driver, she throws her fit. She has her way. I have my own opinion. I want to hear yours before I give mine. But obviously, Danica's out of a crew chief now, and JR Motorsports released Tony Urie Jr. from his duties as crew chief of Danica Patrick on the number 7 GoDaddy Nationwide Series team. What are your thoughts? Why did that happen? And I'll tell you what my thoughts are after you tell me yours.
Chemistry, communication, and they don't think she's making progress fast enough, because next year she's got a full-time ride in NASCAR, and I think it's just that happens an awful lot in racing, especially when it's so important for the crew chief and the driver to be on the same wavelength as far as communication goes. Understand, you know, a lot of them even use the number system, trying to simplify it. Hey, my car's loose going in, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not so bad, 10 being awful, it's a 3 or a 4 or 5. I don't know if the vernacular was different. I don't know if they just the communication styles were different. I don't know if the personalities just didn't click. You know, anywhere in life you run into guys or gals that you just, you know, you're never going to be able to do more than exchange pleasantries with. And those kind of things, they got to get along. They got to like each other. They got to understand each other's verbiage. And if those three things aren't there, you might as well make a break for it and try somebody else. I think they're making a mistake with Danica because they're bringing her too far too fast. And I understand it's all because of the money, but look at the guys who are terrific open-wheel racers that couldn't make a stock car go worth a hoot. Dario Franchini, Ed Carpentier, Jacques Villeneuve tried it, although he's just a jerk, and we don't want him in NASCAR anyway. But there's very few guys that can make that transition. Their names are Mario Andretti, A.J. Foyt, Tony Stewart, and to a certain degree, Sam Hornish. And he's coming along fairly well. But look what he had to do. They jumped him in NASCAR in the big show and then had to run him back Nationwide and just kept gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs of seat time. They've got Danica in the Nationwide car for 10 races, and they want her to come up and be successful. Ain't going to happen. She needs another year in Nationwide. And then Tony Stewart Racing, who she is on contract with to race the Cup Show next year, has got their own sponsorship issue. So Cliff and I were joking that maybe, you know, Danica might be on the bench beginning of the year, and Tony will take the GoDaddy money. So you never know how that's going to work out. They're bringing her along too fast.
I agree with you on that. I think, and obviously we don't have time to get into this debate, but I think Nationwide needs to be a true developmental league where they really need to develop as a NASCAR driver. Those are two different race car series, two different types of race cars. You have to develop yourself, no matter how good of an open-wheel racer that you are. So I agree with you on that. But as far as the crew chief, I think, you know, here's what it amounts to. Danica basically says, I'm going to hold my breath that you fire him. Well, don't. Be relaxed, Danica.
Oh, you really think
that's why, and it goes exactly into what you said. It's chemistry, and you know, here's the thing. I don't know how much of a debate goes into where they were at and where they were wanting to, the pace they were wanting to go to, but also I think it goes to this. Danica knew where she needed to be at. Their team wasn't there. And somebody has to take the fall for it, and just like in football or any other thing, you know, the crew chief takes the fall for it. Heaven forbid the driver, especially when the driver's Danica Patrick, take any responsibility for not winning a race. But that's neither here nor there.
You know, and somebody ought to sit back and take a look at Danica's Nationwide Series and a Cup show that she run this year and see how many times she crashed out that really wasn't her fault. And I keep remembering that Jacques Villeneuve punt that they nailed her in Montreal, and that there was about three races right in a row where she got caught up in stuff that was absolutely not her fault. I'm not defending her at all, but I think if a guy really wants to have an objective look at it, they should look at it by race and see why she didn't finish or what happened to the thing.
Well, we're going to have to call it quits. I wanted to get into more of NASCAR race, but obviously we had some conversations on IndyCar that we had as well. That's the great thing about the balance is we give you just a special little touch, just a special little tease, and then just let them know that they can get a full hour of race talk right here on the Balance Radio Network through Speed Talk, as a matter of fact. But the next race is up in New Hampshire. Great track. Real quickly, tell us the keys of the race for New Hampshire, and then we got to call it quits, Mr. Cliff.
Well, you have to get Cliff to text you for the keys of the race, but I'll tell you what they are.
I did it, man. I even have a note here. Don't call Pete. So I didn't call you Pete. How about that? I just called you
That's
Cliff.
That's true. So the hazing for the gang thing is probably getting a little bit lighter as long as you don't call anybody the wrong name more than one time for show. So,
see, I just
the keys of the race, New Hampshire. Yeah, starting position, pit strategy. You got four guys that are going to be tough there: Biffle, Stewart, Gordon, and Johnson. And I picked those four guys because of the history, recent history racing up there and stuff. As long as Jeff Gordon doesn't have a throttle stick and his nerves aren't rattled, although I read where the throttle didn't stick wide open, so your nerves are only going to be half shot instead of completely shot the first time you put your foot in the throttle and hit for the concrete wall. But those four guys are going to be the four to watch. I haven't looked at any practice times yet, but New Hampshire is always a really good race, and those guys are going to be competitive. And, that's why they race them. You never know. You thought Will Power had that championship in the bag. He didn't. You thought maybe Keselowski wasn't going to win the NASCAR at Chicago last week. And he pulled a David Pearson and suddenly had a whole lot more car than anybody knew all day. So that's why you got to tune in, especially the last 20 laps, always the best part of a NASCAR race.
Well, there you go. Kenny Barr of Speed Talk. Kenny, where can people find you on Facebook, Twitter, and on Speed Talk? Where can people find you?
You won't find me on Facebook, but you will find me on Twitter, at KennyBarr52. You can always find us on RadioSpeedTalk.com, and our email addresses are all buried in there. I think even her phone number is buried in there, so if you want to call me up and say, hey, you don't know nothing, you don't know what you're talking about, and straighten me up, well, feel free, I might even answer the phone. So,
sounds good, Kenny. We look forward to talking with you next week, and obviously, you guys, everybody can hear Speed Talk right here on the Balance Radio Network immediately following the Colts game right here on the Balance. Guys, we got to go. Coming back up, we've got hopefully Jimmy the intern, but we definitely got Evan Williams standing by from Purdue University, going to break down this week's action in college football right here on the Balance. We'll be right back.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
it's not great. It's fantastic.
This week on the new and revamped Speed Talk, some of the new players are introduced. That's right. I, Kenny Barr, come back as the new co-host alongside Cliff Tanner. And we get right into it and talk about the chase and who we think will win. We also discuss the IRL Championship and the Geico 400 in Chicago. To top it off, we introduce our new segment, Do You Know? Speed Talk, where most shows don't dare to tread.
Fastlane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
my minions. Welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Great first half hour. Talking racing. Talking about Ryan Hunterway winning the IRL IndyCar Championship out in Fontana, California. Taking it away from the grass for Will Power. And what an exciting race that was for Ed Carpenter to win. So make sure you catch Speed Talk right here on the Balance Radio Network tomorrow, right after the Colts game. Well, guys, it's that time of Saturday morning when we break down all the college action. And my two pros experts, or my team's here. I have to kind of – I'm like the dad of the gang here. And I'm using gag now because we used it in the first segment. So we can change the vernacular a little bit if you'd like. But we've got Evan Williams from Purdue University, and Jimmy the intern is, in fact, joining us from Indiana University, two of the biggest schools in the Big Ten, and obviously given their own perspective of college football Saturday. Evan, welcome back to The Balance, sir.
How's it going, Tom?
It is going good. Glad that you could join us again.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back on.
I have to give you a hard time. Also, Jimmy the intern, buddy, I was beginning to worry about you. I don't know if you stayed up too late studying or something, and I was just like, you know, I was about to freak out. I thought you were in that proverbial ditch somewhere in that ghetto cruiser.
Yes, Tom, I made it on the show just fine. I've just been having a bit of a problem with my phone. It's on the fritz a little bit. I'm hoping it picks it through the segment.
I hope so, Joe. You did pay the bill, didn't you?
I paid the bill, but, you know, a Samsung Intensity 2 is a long way from a smartphone, my friend.
You need to get you the new iPhone 5. Are you an Apple or a Droid guy?
Right now, I'm neither. Like I said, probably I would be an Apple guy, but let's face it, the ghetto cruiser doesn't feed itself. Gas costs money.
It does. Evan, are you a Droid or Apple guy?
I'm a big Apple guy. I got my iPhone 4S right now.
There you go. I am a huge Apple guy. And I tell you what, I'm still stuck in the past. I mean, I'm like dinosaur ages. I've got an iPhone 3. My son's got an iPhone 5. And he's like, text me, hey, I got the 5. You still on the 3, Dad? So here's the thing. I feel like I've got one of those old flip phones that I got to pull up the antenna on, you know, that I've got the 5. Now, our social media director, Michelle, she's a big Droid person and thinks Apple is the bad guy out to destroy the world. So, you know, as long as you guys are happy and we can connect and talk college football, I guess that's what matters. Well, we're going to talk some college football. Let's talk about – we'll start with Purdue. I'm liking what I'm seeing this year with Purdue. And I know, obviously, they're 2-1. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about Purdue. Obviously, they got they had Eastern Michigan just did a – I don't like to use the words run up the score. Obviously, it's college football. They can run up the score if they want to. But 54-16, that is a heck of a win for Purdue against Eastern Michigan.
Yeah, it was a good win, you know, after a tough loss against Notre Dame. It was, you know, a good game to pull everything back together, you know, get some practice in during the game. Most of the second team played most of the second half for Purdue. So that was, I think, was really a good tune-up. You know, now we have the bye week, which is good. You know, get some guys rested up, prepare for a tough Marshall team next week.
Jimmy, as you watch this game against Eastern Michigan, what are some of your thoughts on this particular game? Because to me, I don't like to use that word "run up the score," but IU saw that happen to them. What are your thoughts when you see a win of 54-16? Is that do you believe in the running up the score scenario?
Tom, I think it should mean even more coming from me, because when IU gets the score run up on it, I see nothing wrong with it. They can't stop the other team from doing it. The other team has every right to do it to them. I really don't have a problem with it. Especially that being said, to Purdue, in this game against Eastern Michigan, I think they showed that they are indeed one of the best teams in their division. I don't think there were a lot of Purdue fans who thought that at the start of the year, But Purdue is outperforming their expectations, and a lot of other teams in that division aren't playing up to them. Purdue, I think, was just showing how capable of an offensive squad they are. They did that in spades last Saturday.
Right, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Ball State game. Dude, I think you absolutely jinxed us on that 39-41 score against Ball State. We saw what they did against UMass. You sent me a text that said Ball State's going to hand it to us. You are absolutely right. IU also has the bye week this week. But talk with us about that Ball State game.
IU played a lot better than I thought they were going to play. They actually led at halftime. They finished the game with almost 560 yards. Kevin Wilson actually said afterwards, some folks were asking him questions about what he thought of his team's performance. He thought they were going to put 650 yards, 45 points up, quote-unquote, easy. He was really expecting great things out of his team. He saw them for three quarters. IU scored 39 points in three quarters. It was that third quarter that killed them. They didn't score any. They moved the ball for like 32 yards, and Ball State outscored them 14 to nothing. We don't need to get into the last couple drives. IU looked great. They really had no business winning that game because of how they performed in that third. But when they took the lead, Ball State down with 46 seconds to go. Personally, I don't think that Willie Snead made that catch. His elbow looked to be out of bounds, and even if it wasn't, he should have been ruled down in bounds. He should have been ruled down inside. The clock should have continued to run, and IU should have escaped with the victory. One way or another, Ball State should not have left Memorial Stadium with a victory, but somehow it's Indiana football, and that's exactly what happened.
And unfortunately, when you say it's Indiana football, I think everybody agrees with you. Unfortunately, we've come to expect that sort of scenario. Well, we're going to walk around the Big Ten. Obviously, we know that both Purdue and IU are on a bye week. It gives them an opportunity to regroup, and maybe do some healing on the injury front. Real quickly, Evan, is there anything that you think that Purdue needs to do in this bye week to get ready as they get ready for the Big Ten in the near future here?
I think they need to use this bye week to really study film and to practice, because right after this Marshall game, they're going into the toughest stretch of their Big Ten schedule with Michigan, Ohio State, and Wisconsin. So Purdue's really going to have to be prepared to come out those weeks and play as hard as they can and show that they can put points up on the board like they've done against, Eastern Michigan, Eastern Kentucky, and also play defense like they did in games like Notre Dame. But like I said, earlier, the bye week's really good at this time to get some guys rested up. There's not too many major injuries out there for Purdue right now, so knock on wood for that. Just some minor things, get some guys, rehabbed a little bit, and come out next week and play hard.
All right, guys, let's walk around the Big Ten here, and we might run over just a tad bit because I want to make sure that we get through a lot of our college football talk, and we don't have a scheduled NFL guest. We might run over a little bit, so if you guys need to jump off, just say, hey, buddy, I got to go if we run over the 10 o'clock mark. But I do want to get through some of these games. Let's talk about Michigan State and Eastern Michigan. Obviously, Notre Dame handed it to Michigan State last week. Certainly, I didn't see that coming. But then we look at who they play. We look at them playing Eastern Michigan. Obviously, a big interstate rivalry going on there between the two of them. And we look at what Purdue was able to do to Eastern Michigan last week. And we look at what Notre Dame was able to do to Michigan State. So to me, it's kind of a wash. Although Michigan State goes in at 2-1, Eastern Michigan goes in at 0-3. Michigan State certainly should not have any problems with Eastern Michigan. But we'll start with you, Evan. What are your thoughts on this game?
Well, Mike, I was really surprised that Michigan State got beat as bad as they did by Notre Dame. I thought they would play a lot more competitive of a game. But I think the key to Michigan State is to shut down EMU's run game. Eastern Michigan did have a pretty capable running game. Purdue did a great job at really limiting the runs that they allowed, but they did break off some big runs. And they do have I can't think of his name. I can't pull it up in front of me. But Eastern Michigan's got a pretty good running back. So, Michigan State should should roll over them. That's the key word. They should. But, you know, look for Eastern Michigan to come out like they did against Purdue running, and, you know, this could be an interesting ball game.
All right, Jimmy, what are your thoughts, Eastern Michigan and Michigan State? Are you still with us, Jimmy? Go ahead. I think we lost you. You'll have to repeat what you just said. I apologize.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm on a different phone than I was before. The other one crapped out, so I'm calling a couple audibles here on the run. Just saying that Eastern Michigan is nowhere near the team Michigan State is. I missed if you guys have already talked about Notre Dame. Did I miss that?
Well, we're just talking about what a great win Notre Dame had over Michigan State, and no one saw that happening. But to me, what I said was I think that it's a wash when you look at Eastern Michigan and how they got beat by Purdue and how Michigan State got beat by Notre Dame. No one saw that coming. So, what are your thoughts on that whole game there, Michigan State and Eastern Michigan?
Well, I still think that Michigan State coming to that game was vastly overrated. I think I made that point on your show last week, just that I didn't think Michigan State had a whole lot beyond Le'Veon Bell. They have a pretty good defense and a very good run game, but Notre Dame in their front seven was able to dominate. I wouldn't be surprised if Eastern Michigan keeps it a little closer than people expect. I don't expect them to win. But I really think people have oversold the Spartans. They don't have much of a passing game. Andrew Maxwell did not show a whole lot against Notre Dame. He still has a whole lot of room for development. I mean, it's a game that Michigan State should be expected to win handily. But the Spartans really aren't as good as people had been saying they are.
Well, I totally subscribe to that theory that the Spartans is a bunch of blowhards. Always said that. But here's the thing. I think Michigan State's got a good team, but I think this year Notre Dame really has proven with that win, a good solid win against a team like Michigan State. And a very good win. I think we have a new, and we talked about it here on the show last week with you, Jimmy, about Notre Dame and this new conference schedule that they're in. Obviously, they became staying independent with the ACC when it comes to football. But I think Notre Dame is back, and I think that they shouldn't be taken too lightly, that's for sure. Well, we move on over to Temple versus Penn State today. Evan, let's talk a little bit about that. Obviously, the Nittany Lions looking to build on to last week's victory against Navy. So let's talk a little bit about this Penn State-Temple game, and what are your thoughts there?
I definitely think last week was a good win for Penn State. They really needed that. If they didn't win last week, things could have gotten out of hand, you know, as far as the rest of their season goes. But I think, you know, they'll have some momentum going into this Temple game with that win from last week. And I think Penn State will win this game, but, you know, it just depends on which team's going to come out and play. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond, you know, after the win last week, come out and how they play this week.
All right, well, let's, Jimmy, are you still with us? I'm going to say that every single time now. Penn State and Temple, what are your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I can just sound off periodically like a submarine would with the sonar, that kind of thing. Make sure you guys know that
just
I am still on board. Yeah, but getting to the Penn State-Temple matchup, I actually do think we're spending some good time on this one because it's going to be a pretty fair indicator of where Penn State is to keep a regular eye on them. Because, like you said before, they struggled in their first two games, losing both of them, and finally getting off the schneid was something good to see. But at the same time, Penn State really has not shown a whole lot. Bill O'Brien coming in, trying to change a culture and really playing style of Penn State, making them a pass-first team, whereas last year they had not been. Matt McGloin went from a weakness last year to now being the focal point of their offense. And anytime that happens with a quarterback as seasoned as that one, he is who he is. And, you know, he's done a very good job growing as a player, but he's also limited as a player. So I think we're going to see Penn State limited as a football team this year. I think they're actually about even with Temple, as sad as that is to say.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to move on around the Big Ten here. We'll start with you on this one, Jimmy, because we're going to talk about Notre Dame. Again, we talked about Notre Dame last week. But Michigan-Notre Dame, obviously, the Wolverines and Notre Dame in this huge non-conference showdown. And really, I think this is going to be as good of a game as last week. And you got great quarterbacks like Denard Robinson and Everett Golson, who really look to have a big game in front of a huge national audience. Those are just some of the key players in this game. This is a marquee, one of the marquee pick games of the week, in my opinion, Michigan versus Notre Dame.
Well, Tom, I'm going to take this opportunity. Actually, no, I won't take this opportunity to toot my own horn because
go
no
ahead.
One likes
we'll
someone
let...
who does that. But at the same time, you know, having said that, I did come out last week and say that I thought that Notre Dame was a lot better than Michigan State and that they would beat him. I don't know if I can say the same thing this week against Michigan. I think Michigan has shown in the past that they're capable of exploiting Notre Dame's less than strong points, we'll put it that way, just in the secondary. The Irish don't have a whole lot of experience in the secondary, but they have a very strong front seven, and they have a really good offense. We talked about it all last year, that if the Irish were able to avoid turnovers, they were killing Michigan early on the road in Ann Arbor. If they hadn't had as many red zone turnovers as they had had, they wouldn't have been in the same position. And they would have been able to get away easily with a win over Michigan. I think tonight's game is going to tell us a lot about Notre Dame. The game last week told us a lot about Michigan State, stuff that some of us had a pretty good idea of but hadn't had it confirmed yet. I think the Irish are good enough in the front seven to take Denard Robinson's run game away. And I think we're going to learn a lot about Notre Dame's secondary, and we're going to learn a lot about Michigan, whether they're a real team. Because make no mistake, Notre Dame is very good.
I absolutely agree. I think this year, if Notre Dame can't put it together this year for a very big bowl appearance, I would be greatly, greatly surprised. Evan, what are your thoughts? Michigan and Notre Dame, obviously one of the key marquee matchups of the weekend. Are you with us there, Evan? It looks like we lost Evan, so we'll continue to move on. Is everybody having phone problems today? I don't know. We'll try to attempt to retrieve Evan here in just a moment. But, well, let's go ahead and move on there to our next game on the list. Obviously, I don't know that this is a big game that we really need to spend a lot of time talking about, but Jimmy, certainly Northwestern's off to a good start, 3-0. They play South Dakota. I don't know that this is going to be a huge struggle for South Dakota, but perhaps maybe you see something that I don't with this game.
No, I think we're pretty much on the same page.
On the same page. So we'll just move on over to another key matchup. Obviously, Nebraska, Idaho State. I like that game. I think it's going to be a good game. I like Nebraska. I like the fact that they're part of the Big Ten now. I like what they have to bring. I like the fans that they have and so forth. And obviously, the Cornhuskers are also getting back senior running back Rex Burkhead, you know, back from an injury that should provide for a nice boost for a very potent ground attack against Idaho State. So what are your thoughts against them?
Well, I think Nebraska's shown some really good things early on. I'm really not too familiar with Idaho State, what they've been able to do so far this season. And I'm inclined to say that Nebraska should be a team that's considered pretty much a lock to beat them. But I think Nebraska gives us another opportunity to talk about how weak the Big Ten has been in comparison to how folks have expected it to be. I mentioned earlier that I thought Purdue was probably the best team in their division. Nebraska was picked early in the season, before the season started, to be one of the favorites to reach the Big Ten title game. Michigan has struggled at times early on. Nebraska's struggled at times early on. So has Iowa. Minnesota really isn't that good to begin with. And we're looking at just about every team, and then obviously Michigan State. They've had their share of issues as well. We have not seen a team in the Big Ten separate itself, Ohio State included. They're probably the best team in the conference, and they weren't able to get impose their will against Cal. And to be honest, they're not even relevant for postseason play. So I don't know exactly what the Big Ten is going to be able to do to represent itself this season. I think Nebraska is part of that problem. They're going to look good this week against Iowa State, one would imagine. But Idaho State, excuse me. But we've also seen this season a bunch of upsets over teams in the Big Ten, and I wouldn't be overly surprised if another one of those happened today.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with you on that. So I would be surprised if Nebraska doesn't win this, but I wouldn't be surprised if they don't. So, you know, I think that anything can happen, and I guess Evan's on the highway and doesn't have a very good signal. He's going to try to get back with us a second. Goodness. Wasn't he just bragging about Apple, how great Apple was, and how he's just all on board with Apple, and he can't keep a signal, although we won't blame that on Apple. That's probably an AT&T or Verizon type thing. Well, let's look at Wisconsin-UTEP. Again, this is you're talking about teams that really are showing how weak that the Big Ten is. You look at Wisconsin going in at 2-1 against UTEP at 1-2, and obviously this is their last chance to get to kickstart its offense or kick it in the rear before beginning Big Ten play. You look at teams like Wisconsin, there are certain expectations, even if it is in non-conference play, and it just seems like that Wisconsin is already struggling on its offense as well. And you look at them going against UTEP, and UTEP's front seven is no joke against the Badgers' offense.
They fired their offensive line coach, Wisconsin did after two games, Tom. That's an indicator of a problem. Their offensive line coach, the original one, went to the NFL, and he left, and they hired somebody from within the ranks, promoted him, and things just didn't work out. The Badgers are already hunting for answers early on. They have not looked anything like a team that many thought could be a national title contender last season. Last year's Badger team was a very good one. In the last two seasons, they've thumped Indiana 83-20 and 59-7, I believe, the two scores have been. They've just been vastly superior. This year, I don't see that gap existing, mainly because Wisconsin has fallen so far off. Danny O'Brien, their quarterback, has not been nearly as good as advertised. The run game hasn't been great. Defense has been disappointing, and the offensive line has fallen far short of expectations people normally have for a Wisconsin O-line. The Badgers just don't look very good this year. They look like a middle-of-the-pack team in their own division, and in a division that includes Indiana, Illinois, and Purdue, that's really a shocking statement to make.
Oh, absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more on that line there. Well, we're going to keep moving around the Big Ten. UAB, Ohio State. Obviously, Ohio State is to me one of the stronger teams in the Big Ten right now. Obviously, 3-0, and they're using this game before going into to fine two things into the Big Ten. What has Ohio State got to do to be ready for a Big Ten season?
Ohio State's just got to keep finding a way to get Braxton Miller comfortable in their offense, what they're going to do. And I think we've been saying it from the very beginning. It's not going to be fair for the rest of the Big Ten when Urban Meyer figures out how to use Braxton Miller in a way that both parties can live with. I mean, he's one of the most explosive athletes in the conference, if not in the country, quarterback athletes. And Urban Meyer has already proven wherever he's gone, whether it be with Alex Smith at Utah, whether it's been with Tim Tebow at Florida, he's going to find ways to make the offense work if he has his kind of players to run it. And Braxton Miller is the prototype. That being said, I think they're still a little ways away from getting there. I think this week's going to tell us a lot just about where that process is, if they've made any developments with him in the offense, and just how much of the playbook they're going to be able to open to him.
And I am really impressed with Ohio State. We were talking about the various different types of weaknesses that we're seeing in the Big Ten. If we look at any team this year so far, and we look at the Big Ten and how the Big Ten really is, I think Ohio State is the only one who's remained on track in spite of all their postseason crap that they've gone through.
Yeah, and that's something that I'm sure the NCAA isn't too happy about, because that really renders their alleged punishments pretty much null and void. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Ohio State can't play in the postseason this year, neither can Penn State, but they're still the best team in the Big Ten, and that doesn't speak well to the Big Ten either. I think the conference is going to have to find some answers to that. On the bright side for me, it makes Indiana much more competitive, because with the rest of the conference isn't very good, there's less of a gap between them and the Hoosiers. But
absolutely.
But it's just hard to watch the conference fall into a state like this. Ohio State's a mid-teens team. I think after this week, Michigan has a chance to fall out of the top 20. We could see Michigan State continue to stay down. And, I really don't see much room for improvement from a lot of other teams. So I think we're going to continue to see Ohio State separate itself from the rest of the conference. And with the rest of the conference being what it is, I don't think that says very flattering things about the state of the Big Ten.
And I hope that we're wrong on that. I hope it's just some of those preseason conversations that we like to get into. I hope that once we get into some Big Ten play, we really see some great games and some great matchups. Obviously, I still always worry about how IU is going to do in the Big Ten. I still worry, but I agree with you. I think that as an IU fan and as an IU alumni, I like my opportunities that are available to me this season, at least how it's shaken out so far. Well, one of my key marquee games of the week that I always like to talk about right here at College Football is I've got circled as, hey, guys, you got to watch this game. This is some real college football. Obviously, it's the first day of fall. Great game for this matchup, LSU versus Auburn. Great, great dominant performances between LSU is obviously back in a very familiar position. SEC, one of the strongest, if not the strongest, conference in college football. And so obviously their opponent, Auburn, is no unfamiliar one. And the Tigers are no joke in their own right, obviously being second right and keep rolling through and to visit Auburn. So LSU versus Auburn, I think this is one of the key matchups for the week.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have the chance to see just how good LSU is. Auburn, we saw a couple weeks ago, struggle with UL Monroe. As they beat Arkansas, they nearly beat Auburn. You could argue they should have beat Auburn. And we're going to find out if LSU is who we think they are. We think they're a dominant team. We saw Southern Cal fall from grace last week with a shocking loss to Stanford. And we've seen a whole lot of other teams in the top 25, the top 10, really, go begging, fall away, and prove that they're nowhere near the league of Alabama. Right now it's Alabama and everyone else. Teams are looking to put themselves in that conversation. But LSU was the preseason number one. They will have the chance to put themselves back in that conversation. And I think this weekend they need to do that by just dominating Auburn.
And absolutely, and obviously some of the key notes and key storylines for this game, LSU has sent five or more pass rushers 24.7% of its opponents' passing plays this season. When blitzing this season, the Tigers have allowed three touchdowns and have yet to sack the quarterback when sending four or fewer passer rushers. They have four sacks and have allowed just one touchdown on 69 attempts, whereas LSU has not allowed a completion on a pass thrown 25 yards or more downfield this season since the start of last season. Only Alabama, in the national championship game against West Virginia in week four, has had more completions than that. So you look at those two storylines, and you look at a good game and an opportunity for a perfect storm tonight.
Yeah, this is apparently a mismatch, and I would not at all be surprised to just see Auburn failed to step up and see LSU separate themselves. But the way the college football season's gone, We could see LSU take another step back here. And if they do that, I really don't know where the next team to get excited about is. Maybe it's Florida State. Maybe it's a team like Clemson. But you have to start going down the list a ways. And once you start doing that, I think the separation grows between Alabama and that second team that we'd be talking about for the national title.
Right, absolutely. Well, we're running just a little bit behind, guys, and for those of you who are tuned in to hear Elizabeth the Greek, we're going to do Elizabeth the Greek, and Jimmy and I will talk about it right on the other side.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth the Greek. Stay tuned. My predictions are coming up right here on The Balance Online with the host, Tom Mompkey.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
it's not great. It's fantastic.
It's time for
the Elizabeth the Greek.
All right, listen up.
Okay, Elizabeth, you didn't have a very good week last week. You only went 4-6.
Let's get into it.
The Eastern Michigan Eagles or the number 21 Michigan State Spartans?
The 21 Michigan Spartans.
The Louisiana Tech Bulldogs or the Illinois Fighting Illini?
The Illinois Fighting Illini.
Number 10 Clemson Tigers or the number 4 Florida State Seminoles?
Yeah.
So you're going to go with the number 4 Seminoles?
Yeah.
That's what we'll do.
Time four.
The number 15 Kansas State Wildcats or the number 6 Oklahoma Sooners?
Cats.
The Wildcats. The Kansas Wildcats. And finally, the number 18 Michigan Wolverines or the number 11 Notre Dame Fighting Irish?
Go Irish!
The number 11 Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Let's move on to the NFL. Do you go with, in the 1 o'clock game, Jacksonville Jaguars or the Indianapolis Colts?
Indianapolis Colts.
The New York Jets or the Miami Dolphins?
The Miami Dolphins.
The Philadelphia Eagles or the Arizona Cardinals?
Philadelphia Eagles!
Let's move on to night game. Do you pick the New England Patriots or the Baltimore Ravens?
The Baltimore Ravens!
And for Monday night, is it the Green Bay Packers or the Seattle Seahawks?
The Seattle Seahawks! Elizabeth Greek. The number to follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/ElizabethTheGreek.
All right, Elizabeth the Greek. I tell you what, I enjoy having young Elizabeth on the air with us. Obviously, she's making her own just super stardom across the nation, and I enjoy having her on, and she's on various different radio stations during Morning Drive, Jimmy. I can't even do that, so my hat's off to Elizabeth the Greek. So we look at her picks this week, and we look at our picks, and so let's talk a little bit about Elizabeth the Greek's picks. Jimmy, what are your thoughts, first of all?
But they seem pretty well in line, and I'm not going to be one to question her. She's been better historically at picking games than I have been, so it's going to be difficult to throw stones there. But yeah, I mean, it seems like she's pretty well on board with what I would say, and the ones that were different on, rather than questioning her, I think I'll start to worry a little bit.
Absolutely. I follow her picks, and we'll see. Maybe I need to go in and change my picks in my office pool or something now. I'm not exactly sure. She talked about a couple games that – and, guys, also make sure you check her out on Facebook. She's got her own Facebook page. You can we've got a link to her Facebook page on our Twitter and also on our Facebook page. But just search Elizabeth the Greek. She's got her own Facebook page as well. And – I tell you what, I think she's 4, maybe a little bit younger than that. So my hat's off to her. But she talked about a couple of teams that we did not in our final moments here, Jimmy. Clemson versus Florida State. She picked Florida State Seminoles on that. What are your thoughts about that game?
Well, College Game Day's there. It's the ESPN Game of the Week. And I think that she's right on picking the Seminoles. Clemson's one of those teams you always see struggle. Ball State ran for 250 yards on them on the road, which was a really impressive showing from them. I think Florida State has a much better defense than the Cardinals do. I think they'll be able to do enough to slow Clemson down and come out of there with a win.
And I agree. I think that would be a good one. And I was starting to see, she talked about Kansas State Wildcats and Oklahoma Sooners. She picks the Wildcats against the Sooners.
Well, that would be an upset. Oklahoma currently ranked 6th in the country, I believe, if not higher. But the fact that Oklahoma is such a favorite, it really does lend some caution because of how favorites have struggled so far this year. And Kansas State does have Colin Klein, one of the early Heisman candidates. He leads his Wildcats to a victory over the Sooners. A lot more folks are going to be talking about him, and I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility.
All right, let's move over just real quickly here and talk about some of these NFL games. What are your thoughts on the Colts and how they played against Minnesota? In my opinion, and as I pointed out in my blog on Indy Pro Sports and on The Balance, here's the thing. What I saw is a very solid team in the first half. I saw a good third quarter, and I saw all the proof in the pudding in the fourth quarter. It was a sloppy win for them. They let off the gas against the Minnesota Vikings. They had that win, even though they still ended up winning. My question to you, and since we cover college, I want to combine this, and not just with the Vikings game. Maybe that was a play there, but just across the NFL. How much of an impact in the NFL is replacement refs playing in the outcome of the game, or do you think that there is absolutely no impact at all in the NFL from these coaches that are used to refereeing the college on the college level?
I mean, it's had a ton of impact in the flow of the game, and I think if the coaches and the players didn't take note of the fact that there are replacement officials, we would see more mistakes than usual, but we wouldn't have the game impacted the same way. I think that the coaches and players are to blame. Coaches have been throwing more challenge flags because of the perceived incompetence of the refs, and they've been wrong more often, and that's even with some of the obvious missed calls that they've had. It's given people an appreciation for the refs who know how to do the little things, like name the correct team. There was a penalty called on number 93 on the red team last week, which is something you would never see a real referee do. But a lot of it, I think, has got to be the coaches and players taking advantage of it. There's been more chippiness. There's been more contact outfield. It's been more of a free-for-all out there because they know the replacement refs don't want to get overly involved. Unfortunately, players and coaches are forcing their hands. I think they have to share some of the blame, too.
Absolutely. Well, Jimmy, that's going to wrap it up for us for this week in college football. We lost Evan. He had phone issues, so hopefully both of you guys can get your phone together. We did tweet out that if our minions got a phone, they want to donate to the cause to Jimmy the intern, to retweet. So maybe we can find you another phone. But, Jimmy, where can people find your work, your masterpieces, and so forth?
Well, they can get at me on Twitter, at JPCIV. And they can check out my written work at iusportcom.com.
All right, Jimmy the intern. Jimmy, we'll see you again next Saturday right here on the Balance Radio Network. My minions, we got to take a break. When we get back, we're going to be talking some NFL, some fantasy football for the fantasy football huddle coming right up right here on the Balance Radio Network.
This week on the new and revamped Speed Talk, some of the new players are introduced. That's right, I, Kenny Barr, come back as the new co-host alongside Cliff Tanner, and we get right into it and talk about the chase and who we think will win. We also discuss the IRL Championship and the Geico 400 in Chicago. To top it off, we introduce our new segment, Do You Know? Speed Talk, where most shows don't dare to tread.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook.
Fastlane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions, work with them today.
Welcome back to the Balance Radio Network. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente, your fearless leader as we go into the NFL and our talk around the NFL and combine it with our fantasy football huddle. We're going to be joined here in just a moment by Sparky, Super Bowl fan as well. Looks like we're going to have Axel with us and Sparky, guys, because I'm going to tell you what, we're going to have a lot of fun breaking down your fantasy football team. We want to talk with you about your team. Give us a call, 917-889-8516. We'll help you set up your lineup and give you all the guidance that you need for fantasy football. We'll be right back for the huddle.
It's about to be a lot of fun today.
Weather's been nice down here, huh?
Yeah, it has been. You know, it's
beautiful.
This is. You know, it was chilly last Sunday.
It was chillier last Sunday.
Absolutely. But it's been nice.
This ain't no 50-degree right here now.
Well, they get this place cold before the game, don't they?
It was cold.
It's 22 degrees out here. Bleeding.
So much for no rain, huh?
Now, stay warm over here. Hey, stay warm over here now.
It's cold. It's raining.
Brad, this wind is stronger than we've ever had.
All right, my minions, it is time for the Fantasy Football Huddle. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Joining with me in the panoramic, Mr. Axel, how we doing, sir? And Mr. Sparky, Super Bowl fan. Welcome to the Fantasy Football Huddle, guys. And it's Saturday morning. I'm ready to talk some football. Axel, how we doing, sir?
Doing good. How about you?
Good. I was beginning to worry about you there for a moment. I am so glad that you were there, and I was like, oh, I'm freaking out. There's no Axel. What am I going to do? The whole show's built around Axel. And no comment, huh?
I'm here to save the day, man. Fire away.
Here to save the day, Mighty Mouse Axel. Also here to save the day, on his way in route to Indianapolis for game number three in the number two in the Lucas Oil Stadium, week number three, against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Super Colts fan Sparky, what's up, brother?
What is going on?
What's going down? What's going around? All right, guys, we're going to talk about this. Let's talk about last week's NFL game. Obviously, what we do here for all of our listeners who may not know, obviously, we're coast to coast. So we're going to talk NFL and around the conference, but we're also going to combine it with our fantasy football huddle. But we're right here in our backyard. Our home team, if you will, is the Indianapolis Colts. We're based here in Indianapolis. So we do talk a lot of Colts, but at the same time, we talk NFL across the board. And we got some great games to get to from last week. Obviously, want to talk about that huge win by the Philadelphia Eagles and so forth. But I also want to talk about, if you guys read my blog and you heard me just in the last segment talking with Jimmy the intern about this, here's the thing, guys. You know, and those people can argue with me that want to argue with me. I'm all about it. Call me 917-889-8516. We will debate this. If you read my blog, you know exactly what I'm saying here. Here's the thing. I saw a great first half. I saw a new and improved Indianapolis Colts. The third quarter was a good third quarter. But the fourth quarter, the proverbial proof in the pudding, the sloppy win, it all came down to this. The Colts still have a lot of improvement to do. They let off the gas. They didn't need to do that. Obviously, there were some key things, and obviously Indianapolis – maybe it was not so much Indianapolis' mistakes, but also at the same time, they weren't able to capitalize on Minnesota's mistakes, which I think is a key element. It was a sloppy win. It started out great. It had all the makings of a great win at home, which they did get. So it's still a win, and a win's a win, a win in the win column at the end of the season. But at the same time, they have not shown me that they are ready to be called the Colts of once year before, which we know that they're in a rebuilding year. So obviously, I'm not going to give them too much grief, but I think there was so much that was shown in that fourth quarter that was hitting throughout the rest of the game, and they need to play the way they did in the first half the entire game and not let off the gas. So we'll start with you, Axel. What are your thoughts on last week's game, the Colts and the Vikings?
Well, it was basically Bruce Arians finally finding out that we cannot run with a lead. That's the bottom line. So we cannot execute run plays with a lead. And his personal groupings were so predictable. His formations were so predictable that it was almost pitiful. I was at the game, actually. And every time an extra safety crept up to the box, Luck never had the freedom to audible into a different run play or something. I mean, it's like they were just like, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And that is what they were doing with Donald Brown running into a wall, trying to run between the tackles. There was no variation in the kind of run plays called, not much variation in the personal groupings involved. And they were trying to play not to lose, to protect the lead, and unfortunately it backfired on them. And now they know they don't have the O-line that can run with a lead, that they cannot afford not to throw in a few extra passes or tweak their run plays a different way so that they can get more production out of it. It was almost pitiful to watch.
Well, and I absolutely agree with you. Now, Super Colts fan, you were in the stands, and obviously we give you are the fan's perspective, and so is Axel as well, but we're going to get with you. You were in the stands. You were out there with the fans for the whole game. Talk to us. Tell us when we were wrong. Was this a letdown in the fourth quarter? Tell us what are your thoughts about last week's. I know everybody's excited about the win. We got a win. It was fantastic. But what were the fans saying inside the stands as they saw that game come apart in the fourth quarter?
Well, you know, a win's a win, but the way we handled it in the fourth quarter was just, it was kind of ridiculous. I mean, I'd have to agree with you. I mean, it was just predictable. I mean, you know, we need a running game. We need a running game. And Brown's just not the answer. He's just not the answer. I don't know why we didn't, you know, try and go get, you know, a different running back, or, you know, maybe work someone else out or something, you know. Because I mean, I just don't think it's, you know, cutting it. I don't think it will cut it with him, you know. And you know, it was just predictable. We couldn't hold that lead in the fourth quarter, and you know, we just kind of fell apart, and you know. Thankfully, you know, Luck got us down the field, and you know, in a few seconds, and we kicked our field goal. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, it was just predictable. I mean, you know, we need a running game. We need a running game. If you don't have a running game, you can't have a, you know, effective passing game. And that running game is just, it needs to improve.
Yeah.
All right.
And
well,
it didn't make sense to either, Tom. It didn't make sense that you keep the training wheels on for Andrew Luck after all that he's shown in the first half. You put the training wheels back on and ask him to game manage, hoping that your running game will keep the clock at bay and all the stuff. And you protect your rookie quarterback and not take risks to protect the lead. And then you, all of a sudden, when the game is tied, when you have to go for it, what does he show you? He showed you what you saw in the first half. So why couldn't you ice the game with an extra score easily, much beforehand? So that's what didn't make sense. If your philosophy was to not take the risk with the rookie quarterback throwing, how was it okay for him to throw backed up on the 20-yard line with the game tied at 20-20 with only 31 seconds to go? Is that, you suddenly change your philosophy with 31 seconds to go? Or did you suddenly realize that your philosophy of playing not to lose actually backfired on you?
Absolutely. And I think we all can agree that for whatever reason and for whatever was going on, we can absolutely 100% agree that the Indianapolis Colts let off the gas against the Minnesota Vikings, which is a big no-no in the NFL. I don't care who your quarterback is, and I don't care what kind of year that you're having. When you're up that many points and you are going into the fourth quarter and you have sealed the win, you just got to keep going. Do not let off the gas as well, guys. Well, real quickly here, I want to go ahead and talk about this week's game against Jacksonville. We're going to go ahead and move on into the fantasy football huddle as well and talk about some of the NFL games from last week, to include that huge win from Philadelphia Eagles. Who has ever thought that the Eagles could come back after 9 turnovers and actually win the game? And so we'll talk about that and obviously incorporate that with the fantasy football huddle. But let's talk about this week. We'll start with you, Sparky. You're on your way here to Indianapolis against to watch the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Indianapolis Colts. What's going on in the land of Sparky? Obviously, we got your Sparky report. Talk with us a little bit about that, which it is posted online, www.indyprosports.com and thebalanceonline.com, the Sparky Report. Talk with us about the Sparky Report, Indianapolis versus Jacksonville.
Well, I believe that Jacksonville, I mean, they're kind of, they've always seemed to be like in rebuilding mode. I mean, the quarterback can't, stay upright. You know, their offensive line is, horrible. Whoever's playing him is always chasing Blaine Gabbert around, and they all said that he was going to be improved this year from last year, and haven't seen it yet. So therefore, I mean, with that defensive line that we got, and ready and everybody going after him, I mean, I believe that we could end up with 5 or 6 sacks at the end of the day. And we're just we're going to be chasing him all across the field, knocking him down, and they don't have any really key wide receivers. They have decent wide receivers, but I mean, as long as your quarterback's running for his life, they ain't gonna get the ball off. And I mean, as long as we can stop, Jones Drew, I mean, we'll be all right. And as far as our offense goes against that defense, I don't really, their defense is not really much better than their offense, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't expect that team to win any more than 1 or 2 games this entire year. So I mean, I don't expect them to win, one this weekend.
All right, Axel, what are the keys to the matchup, the Indianapolis Colts and the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Well, actually, I would prefer them to run more, because with Christian Ponder and Jay Cutler, we have allowed about 65% completion. And, yes, of course, we had that one interception versus Jay Cutler. And besides that, we haven't really made any ball-hawking moves or anything like that, and Christian Ponder drove down the field just fine. I mean, I prefer them to run. We have held Matt Forte and Adrian Peterson under check, so I have more confidence that we will hold MJD under 100 yards. I'll have more confidence in that than holding Blaine Gabbert under 200 yards, to be honest with you, because our secondary, as much as I would like to think they're improved. I mean, yes, there's an infusion of talent, but of course, this is a step below Christian Ponder, Blaine Gabbert. So that is the X factor, and we don't know. He showed some improvement in preseason. He's been hit and miss, and he will basically go and play with Justin Blackmon. I mean, Justin Blackmon, we just need to be mindful of the fact that we are giving almost a two-thirds completion rate for the passes attempted by Christian Ponder and Jay Cutler, and none of their O-lines looked great against other teams. So that's why I'm kind of a little concerned with our pass rush without Freeney allowing such a high completion percentage.
And you know what? I absolutely. So, guys, we're going to be excited to see what happens with the Indianapolis Colts and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Well, guys, it's that time of the week when we run Colts trivia. And whoever happens to be on the air, and last week, we actually, I think you were on with us then, Chad, I'm not sure, but we did kind of stump Phil Wilson, although he did cheat and Google it. So, guys, don't Google your answers here, although I will tell you that it's an easy question, and we want to make sure also that we give our social media people time to answer as well. And we're getting that question up as we speak, guys, because I'm going to tell you, it's time for Colts Trivia.
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports. March, Bart rides up in the front seat today because he's a good guy at sports.
All right, the question is up, and here's the question. Who? And it's probably a pretty easy one. And Axel, we're going to let you go second because I'm pretty sure you know the answer to this. Remember, guys, don't Google your answer. It's just for fun. It's just for bragging rights. And if you Google, you really don't know the answer. So we're just going to go with what you know. All right, who was the Indianapolis Colts' leading rusher in 1998? Sparky.
Oh, man. I can't even think of one running back, man, 1998. I don't know.
Peter, you just pooped all over the bed.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
All right, Axel.
I want to say James, but I don't know.
Who did you say?
I want to say James, but I'm not sure about that.
Well, dude, the key to the answer to the question was who was the Colts' leading rusher in 1998? Okay,
James wasn't drafted. That's before I started like really, really, really getting into football. So that's kind of, yeah, I don't know.
All right, Axel. Who was the Indianapolis Colts leading rusher in 1998? I'm sure you know this.
Is it James Mungro?
No. All of you guys. No.
Who's running back with Jim Harbaugh?
Peter, you just pooped all over the bed.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
Both of you guys are sad sack for the rest of the week. It was Marshall Faulk was the Indianapolis Colts leading rusher in 1998. Hopefully our social media people got better answers than our so-called panel of experts. So, oh well, it you know, that's fine, guys, that's fine. Well, we move on. It is now time for Fantasy Football Huddle, buy, sell, or trade. All right, here's what we do, guys. Buy, sell, or trade. We talk about it as we move into week number 3 of fantasy football. And you know, your strategies are probably starting to take place. You're starting to look at the waiver wires. So I'm just going to kind of add buy, sell, trade, the moving up and moving down in the waiver wire back from week number 2. And we'll see where we're at moving into week number 3. So in my category of moving up, and I would say buy on a quarterback, Matt Castle of the Chiefs. The way the Chiefs are going, Axel and Sparky the Castle. Castle is going to be loading up on garbage time points in 2012. Two blowouts in the season, and he's the 6th ranked fantasy passer. for 559 yards. So, Axel, I ask you, buy, sell, or trade Matt Cassel?
I would say buy. I would say buy because Dwayne Bowe is a late bloomer every season, and Matt Cassel still has games against the Raiders to go, and I think he's got games against the Colts too, and it's not the greatest of, I mean, the Denver Broncos and the San Diego Chargers have more stout pass defenses, but he's got two games against the Raiders, and he's got to play the Panthers and the Buccaneers still. So based on who he's got on the schedule, playing a bottom of the barrel schedule versus possibly the Browns and the Colts as well, I think it's a good buy because he should be easily available. So,
all right, buy, sell, or trade Matt Cassel, Sparky.
I would. That's kind of a hard one. I mean, I was a believer of him when he came over from the Patriots, but I mean, I don't know about him. You know, I don't really know, you know, if he can really succeed over there. But I mean, you know, but then again, with Dwayne Bowe over there, yeah. I mean, you know, he has a good, you know, target for a wide receiver, so I'd probably pick him up. Bye.
All right, moving down in my opinion, I would say if he's on your list, if he's on your team, I would either bench him or I would look at opportunities to trade him or drop him in, pick another quarterback up. Jake Locker of the Titans. Now, this isn't much of an indictment on Locker, I would say, guys, as it is on the entire Titans offense. The offense line looks bad. I don't like the way Chris Johnson, I'm sorry, is in a coma. Kenny Britt is tied together with a string and Nate Washington has a sore cap as well. There are a lot of things going on with Tennessee. I want to steer clear of Tennessee. Everybody are on their O-line. Get rid of them. Go get somebody else. We'll start with you, Axel.
I'm so glad that Peyton Manning didn't go to Tennessee, to be honest with you. I'm selling Jake Locker. I mean, I just don't see him playing against the likes of the Texans, and I just don't see him with that offensive line. I mean, they used to be a very good pass-blocking offensive line. They lost Jake Scott from last year. He's still there waiting for the right contract. Even though he's available, he's not going to sell himself short and come back for a vet minimum or anything. So that's the rumor. So losing Jake Scott did hurt him, and they weren't a good run-blocking O-line anyway. And the more Chris Johnson fails, the easier it is for them to tee off on the pass. So, I see Chris Johnson's numbers improving to the extent of 50 to 100 yards every game. Right now Jake Locker is rushing for more than Chris Johnson, believe it or not, so in two games. So I'm selling at this point.
All right, Sparky, buy, sell, or trade Jake Locker.
I'd sell him. I mean, without Chris Johnson's nowhere to be found. And, you know, without a running game, you can't have a passing game and vice versa. And, you know, that team's just – they've fallen apart. And, you know, they need to wake up. There ain't no one there that's doing anything. And, you know, I'd sell him. Even though I'm a fan of his, I would sell.
All right, guys, obviously in most leagues, and especially in your PPR leagues, most of your points come from the running back situation. Now, again, same thing, moving up, moving down, although I've added a little bit more to my list, a little bit more time I want to spend on the running backs, just because that's, let's face it, where a lot of us get our points. Remember, guys, if you want to talk to us about setting your fantasy football lineup, or you've got some questions as far as who you'd like to buy, sell, or trade, or got questions, give us a call. We'd love to have you on the show today. 917-889-8516 is the number. Real easy to get to us here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll get you on the air, obviously, live right here, and talk about the fantasy football, your fantasy football lineup. Now, over in the running back situation, I like C.J. Spiller of the Bills. He's moving up 2 weeks in a row. Boring, I know, but deserved the courtesy of his demolition of the Chiefs. Spiller now has 364 total yards and three touchdowns for the year, ranking him as the number one fantasy running back. It's beginning to look like the Bills are starting to starting running back gig is Spiller's to lose. So basically what I'm saying is the Bills are going to – the key point in the running game is C.J. Spiller with the Bills, guys. If you don't have him – and here's a little bit of a whisper in the ear. If you don't have him, go pick him up because he's going to be picked up relatively quickly, and I would be very, very surprised if he's still available in the free agency world. Axel, C.J. Spiller.
Oh, come on, man. It's a definite buy. There's no doubt about it. It's a definite buy. You know who the AFC East is playing? You know, the AFC East is playing the AFC South. I mean, AFC South is probably one of the weakest divisions in football right now, with the Jags, Colts, and Titans all having first or second year quarterbacks. And so I'm almost stuck. And then he ran roughshod over the Jets the other day, and based on how Arian Foster ran versus the Dolphins, I'm pretty sure that when he gets a chance against the Dolphins, he's got to play them twice as well. So maybe New England is the only start front seven he'll play in his division, and the Texans in the AFC South. So he's got some real good matchups. I mean, it'd be hard to pass up on him. But I doubt he's in the waiver wire, to be honest with you. I really doubt he's on the waiver wire. I mean, if he is on the waiver wire, then you are in a totally uninformed fantasy football league. So.
All right, Sparky, C.J. Spiller, buy, sell, or trade?
I would buy him, because the schedule that, of course, remaining in the season is still early and everything, but, that division's weak, and I definitely buy into him, but you also got to take it, into consideration, too, that they fell apart last year, and they might do it again this year, so that could, also contribute to it. But with the schedule that's remaining on that, yeah, I'd definitely buy him.
All right, guys, let's move up to my next running back. Moving up in the list, Michael Bush of the Chicago Bears. Bears head coach Lovie Smith says Forte does not have a high ankle sprain, but on the other hand, they have re-signed Bell. So they are obviously concerned about Forte's availability in the short term. While Forte won't miss significant time if Smith's commitments are true, Bush figures to start for at least a week and maybe more. The team's offense crashed back to earth after a solid week one performance, obviously, against the Colts. But Bush could not be gold as the Bears could face a weak rushing defense over the next 3 weeks. And that's the Rams, the Cowboys, and the Jaguars. Guys, pick up Michael Bush. This is a good opportunity for you to get some easy points. Get rid of him later on. Axel, what are your thoughts on Michael Bush?
Yes, he's a good buy option for the short term. And basically, he gets a lot of goal line carries. Matt Forte has never been the kind of guy who punches in for touchdowns, whereas Michael Bush is the kind of guy who gets the touchdown points. But between the 20s, Matt Forte moves them into the red zone. So so basically, I would still keep Michael Bush as a handcuff. But if the right trade offer comes up, I mean, if he just lights it up for the next 2-3 weeks, that would be a good time to get a trade for some other position like tight end, wide receiver you may be lacking in, and get a top quality one, because Michael Bush's run with the most number of carries is not going to last long. Forte will eat into it eventually, so.
All right, let's go with you, Sparky. Michael Bush, buy, sell, or trade?
You really want me to go there and talk about the Bears? he would not be my first option for a running back, but unfortunately, living up here, I'm forced to watch this, what we call a so-called game up here in Illinois, when the Bears play, but. They cannot play a contending team. Whenever they play a contending team, they fall apart. They look like the Bears that I know. When they play a team that you know, is not a contending team, they look great. So if you have them for that week that they don't play a contending team, then play him. He's going to score you some points. If they're playing a contending team, play someone else.
All right, now let's go to my next guy on the running back list, Andre Brown of the Giants. I've seen the Giants play very, very well, and if you have the Giants, like for example, like our social media director, Michelle, she has the Manning and the Giants defense did good for her, obviously, so far. She's got 35 points going into this week, which is a good start going into your fantasy football week. So I like the Giants. Just like with Tennessee, I say, get rid of the Tennessee O-line. If you got anybody on the Giants, it's a good opportunity that you're going to get some points. So we're going to start with Andre Brown. Ahmad Bradshaw may miss some time with a neck injury. And in the rookie first-round pick, David Wilson is firmly in the doghouse for fumbling in week one. Enter Brown, who looked good, rushing 71 yards and scored 31 carries while adding 19 yards in a pair of receptions. He looked to be the starter if the MRI on Bradshaw's neck turns up to be something serious. But with a Thursday game on tap, Brown figures to be getting the starting nod in week three. Obviously, we know that that's already happened. So, you know, let's look at Andre Brown, Axel, yes or no? Buy or sell?
Well, neither. I would trade with this guy. It's like, I mean, I just do not see that Ahmad Bradshaw being totally phased out when he comes back. And Bradshaw's played through injuries before, and so he may actually come back earlier than Matt Forte. And Bradshaw also is a goal line back, unlike Matt Forte. So I do think he will eventually eat into the value of Andre Brown, and Andre Brown is a really good trade bait because he's not going to play run defenses like the Panthers too often in his division. So the Eagles and the Cowboys, I mean, yes, Marshawn Lynch ran roughshod over them, but the O-line of the Seattle Seahawks and Marshawn Lynch, they are different kind of beastie kind in the running game, not like the Giants O-line, which is not quite as beastie. And they still rely on the passing game more in New York. So I'm just thinking he'd be very good trade bait after a couple of performances.
All right, Sparky, what are your thoughts? Buy, sell, or trade Andre Brown?
You know, this guy's had, you know, pretty much one game experience. You know, I mean, he looked great. You know, he looked really good. I mean, if he's going to be a one game wonder, I don't know, but this guy reminded me when I watched him the other night, looked like Brandon Jacobs out there, just powering through people, putting his head down. You know, he has something to prove. You know, he was cut by, you know, seven times by five different teams. I mean, he's out there. He knows this is his opportunity, and he proved it. I mean, he looked good, but, you know, I don't know. I'd be you know, iffy to pick him up because you don't know if this, you know, if it was going to be a one game thing. But you know, I would say I definitely probably trade him because I'm not really confident about him. But I mean, he looked good the one game, but hopefully he does. Hopefully, you know, he sticks with it. But I don't know.
All right, we look at those. Now we look at some of the running backs that are decreasing in value, and then we're going to get over to the wide receivers. But I do want for you guys to take some time, and I don't know that we really have a lot of time to get into some comments about these guys, but if you've got them on your team, I would consider either dropping them or trading them. Obviously, I talked about Chris Johnson. I call him CJ, get rid of him. His value is sinking very, very quick, and you do not want to be on a sinking ship with Chris Johnson. He's not going to be what you thought he was. He's with the Titans. Chris Johnson, get rid of him. Ryan Williams of the Cardinals, it's not like Beanie Wells has been lighting it up, but Williams has been awful with 18 carries for 22 yards and 4 receptions for 27 yards. I will do the math for you. A negative 22 touchdowns, 49 yards, not to mention an almost fatal fumble late in the fourth quarter this week. I tell you what, giving him two fumbles already in 2012, boot him off your team, get rid of him, see if you can't pick up a good trade. Kevin Smith with the Lions, I'm not impressed with him at all. was, I mean, extremely unimpressive with the 49ers that the coaching staff turned out to do some retread named, Joakim Bale, with 26 years old, has never carried the ball during the 3 years in the league. And you look at with Mike LaShore returning from suspension in week three, Smith's fantasy value is also going in the commode. I wish I still had that. I wish I still had the blushing sound. So whenever you hear this sound, guys, this means you've got to get rid of your player.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
When you hear playoffs, checking them out, playoffs, you need to be getting rid of your players. So let's go on over to the wide receivers. Those that are moving up in value. I like the Rams this year, guys, and they're one of your sleeper teams that they've got some good fantasy players on their team. One of them I like a lot is Danny Amamito. Amayo. I don't know. D.A. We'll call him D.A. Should fumble on his first reception every game. But after having the Redskins return his early fumble for a touchdown, this guy's gaining value. I like him. He's a good sleeper pick. Pick him up. If nothing else, pick him up and put him on your bench and see how he's going to do. We're going to start with you, Axel. Danny Amamito. I'm just going to call him D.A., brother. You know, I have a problem.
Danny Amendola.
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 Yeah.
Reminds me of that line on Waterboy. What's it called? Agmandello. Anyway, go ahead.
he's more like a West Walker kind of guy who'll get a lot of yards, but he hasn't been targeted as much in the red zone. So I would take a chance and buy him right now because you'll at least constantly get about 8 to 9 points every game. But the question is, will he give you the 15, 16, like an elite wideout with that extra touchdown with more end zone looks? That right now it doesn't look like it. So that's the difference between him being a top 30 wide receiver versus top 10 wide receiver. So right now he's still in the top 30 kind.
Real quick here, Axel. Wes Walker, you mean the old Wes Walker or the new Wes Walker here in New
England? No, the old Wes Walker. Old Wes Walker.
What is going on over there? I mean, I know they've got a New England has a very potent, and they got a lot of weapons, and they're trying to see, you know, what works best for them. But, I mean, when it's not broke, don't fix it. And Wes Walker isn't broke. He's sitting on the bench for no reason at all. Anyway, we'll get
into that.
I'm telling
you, it is all the Josh McDaniels factor. Josh McDaniels, because he had that great 16-0 season versus the Patriots, got the head coaching job at the Broncos. The Broncos are still picking up the pieces, the residual effects of the McDaniels era, where he traded off Brandon Marshall, traded off Jay Cutler, traded off Peyton Hillis. You know, I mean, you got to be kidding. It's like he just set that franchise back and then introduced Tebow Mania into the Bronco land. And all that stuff that he did over there, so they're trying to undo right now. And now he becomes the offensive coordinator of the Patriots again and brings Brandon Lloyd, one of his favorites from the Broncos, over there. But Brandon Lloyd, I mean, he's not as good as we thought he was. And basically, that's the Josh McDaniels factor I attribute to the Patriots offense. And it's going to take some time before their offense starts clicking.
Well, here's the thing, and obviously we don't have time, and we're going to just kind of go through these a little bit here. But, you know, here's the thing. You look at Bill Belichick, probably one of the best coaching minds, whether or not you like the Patriots or not. Certainly better, one of the best coaching minds. And you look at Aaron Hernandez, expected to miss several weeks. I think that the option that Bill Belichick had no longer exists and has the luxury of phasing out Wes Walker. Certainly, one would think if you're smart, you've already got him on your team. But let's talk about somebody else moving up in value. And I want to get to this, and we'll start with you, Sparky. I actually picked this guy up myself this week. And so I think that he's a good, solid sleeper. Who I'm speaking of is Donnie Avery with the Colts, obviously with Austin Colley sidelines. Avery has taken over the spotlight in the starting lineup for the Colts. Obviously, we know a lot about Donnie Avery. We looked at what he did last week. I think he's a good opportunity to pick up. So buy, sell, or trade Sparky Donnie Avery?
I would definitely buy. This is like, I think this is one of our biggest acquisitions during the offseason, and we kind of see which way, he took the place of Pierre Garçon. I would think, it's a big upgrade from Pierre, too. This guy has speed, he has good hands, and, he's one of the prime receivers when he came over from St. Louis, and, he's going to get a lot of targets, and he's quickly becoming Locke's favorite receiver to go to, second to, Reggie Wayne. I think they kind of both switch off, and I definitely buy him. He's going to be targeted a lot, and, wouldn't it be surprised if he ends up with the season with 70, 80, maybe even 90 catches.
All right, real quick, Axel, Donnie Avery, buy, sell, or trade?
I would trade because of his injury history, but I'm just, for Cole's sake, I'm hoping he stays healthy. But he spent 4 years in Rams and never played a whole healthy season. So that's what scares me, and hopefully those are past him for the Cole's sake, but my mind says I'd buy and trade him.
Well, I picked him up this week. I'm going to see where that's at. All right, guys, with wide receivers.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Get rid of Robert Meacham of the Chargers. Kind of like looking like Malcolm Floyd is the new Vince Jackson out there. Get rid of him. Randy Moss of the 49ers. Even though 49ers are having a great year, get rid of him. And obviously, I think the 49ers also told Moss that he would be limited on his rep count. And what I'm seeing, and they're apparently telling the truth, and it's apparently working for him. And, Randy Moss is of somebody of past. The Anquan Boldin of the Ravens, get rid of him. Moving up in the tight end value, guys, I like Brandon Myers of the Raiders. 2 games, 11 targets, 11 receptions, 151 yards. Hey, it's not like the Raiders have a lot of proven talent at wide receiver, so let's go with the tight ends, Brandon Myers. Also, going over to the Chargers, Dante Rossio, pick him up. 3 touchdowns.
Rosario,
thank you, Axel. Yeah. I'm gonna leave it to the Indian to tell me how to speak English. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Okay.
I'm just kidding with you, man. I'm just kidding with you. You feel free to sad sack me anytime you want, there, Axel. That's fine. But moving down in value over there with the tight ends, get rid of Fred Davis with the Redskins.
Hey, Sean, some books, please.
Pardon me?
I thought you were
talking to me. Go get some books to read. Then you'll learn how to speak English. That was perfect timing, Axel. I thought he was coming back with a slap. But no, he was talking to his kid. That was great. Were you even part of that last part of the conversation?
No.
You were telling me how to say Rosario. And I said, leave it to the Indian to teach me how to speak English. And then you tell your daughter to go read some books, although I didn't know that. I thought you were talking to me. I thought you said go read some books from time to time. Maybe that'll help your English. And I thought you were coming back with a pretty good slap, and I was taking it.
That's why they say read, Indiana, read.
That's right. Read Indiana, read. Absolutely, guys. Well, you know what? We don't have time to really get into some of the defenses or kickers, and we'll try to get time for them next week. Guys, also, feel free to tweet us your fantasy football questions throughout the week, Team Balance, or drop us a line on Facebook, The Balance, guys. Well, we're coming up to the 2-minute warning, and so we're going to go around the clock and let you guys rant about whatever you want to rant for 1 minute, 30 seconds apiece. We'll start with you, Axel. Go.
Ah, Bruce Arians, come on, get your act together. Call some passing plays for crying out loud. It's like one game you pass too much, the other game you run too much. I mean, just take the training wheels off Andrew Luck, man. Come on. let him do his thing.
All right, Aaron, time up. Sparky, 30-second rant, go.
The fans that come out to the stadium and during third down, all they do is sit in their seats with their binoculars or with their earphones in, you know, in their ears and don't get up and get loud. You know, if you're just gonna go, if you're just gonna come to the game just to watch it, go home and watch it. You know, it's ridiculous. We're out there trying to have fun and everything, and you know, people complain and everything. Sit down. No, I'm not sitting down. Get up off your butt and, you know, cheer for your team that you came to see.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. I appreciate you stopping by. Come by next week. Get out there and support your NFL team, whoever it might be. I really don't want to hear any more about these replacement refs, guys, because I tell you what, they're stepping up. Don't call them scab refs. If that wasn't for them, we would not have a game, guys. Face it, your players, your teams have to do better on the field, guys. That's going to do it for me. Don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. We'll see you guys next week right here on The Balance.
Well, when I say when you gotta go, you gotta go.
You have made me very angry. Very angry indeed.
Oh, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, gun. You thought I was gonna say son of a bitch, didn't you?
That's all, folks.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.